Golf Smarter number 241, published on July 27, 2010.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Comedian Matty B recaps our round and the Open Championship.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. The good news is that I'm back from my vacation in Boston, and the bad news is that I'm back from my vacation in Boston. My wife and I had a great time and fit in a lot while we were there. Sailed out to Martha's Vineyard, saw the Red Sox win a game in extra innings, watched the Boston Pops, toured Harvard, rode the swan boats in Boston Commons, even rode the carousel that used to be at Paragon Park in Nantasket Beach, in addition to connecting with friends and family. The real bonus was that I got a chance to play two rounds of golf on this vacation. And the first round was at Shaker Hills in Harvard, Mass., which has been rated as the number one public course in Massachusetts. And it was designed by Brian Silva. Remember that name? He's an outspoken and really interesting golf course architect who was featured on Golf Smarter number 55 back in January of 2007. If you've not heard that show and are a Golf Smarter member, definitely check it out because you'll learn a ton about how architects design strategy into a golf course. You'll really learn a lot on how to play a course when you understand what their thinking is. I love that show. I tried an experiment this time when I traveled, and even though I knew I was going to play twice, I didn't bring my golf clubs. I did bring a box of Dixon Earth balls, a glove, my divot tool, my ball marker, and my new pair of Dogs golf shoes. You've seen those? Dogs, D-A-W-G-S. They're kind of like Crocs. You know, those really comfortable plastic shoes that everyone seems to be wearing. Well, Dogs compress really small for packing and were actually really comfortable. So I'll definitely travel with them again. If you're interested in those shoes, let me know. And I'll see if I can get a preferred pricing in our Golfer's Mark for you. I also rented clubs at Shaker Hills and had a great round. I shot an 81 with the rented clubs, but I got to warm up and stretch and hit balls and putt, so I felt comfortable going into the round. Now, the second round is the subject of today's show. Frequent Golf Smarter guest, comedian Matty B, his website is mattyblake.com, is back to give us a hacker's perspective on this year's Open Championship. But we covered a lot more, so let me set this up. Matty grew up in Boston and was really happy that we could get together so we can play 18. Knowing my feelings about eco-friendly balls and being a Californian that likes the eco-friendly stuff, he suggested that we play an environmentally friendly course called Widow's Walk. He brought an extra set of clubs for me to play with, but we arrived to the course with no time to warm up, no time to hit balls, no time to stretch. We didn't even have time to practice putting, so neither of us had a very good round. I shot a 93, and he was a lot higher than that. I shot a bunch of video on both courses, and we'll let you know when I've got them posted on our Golf Smarter TV channel and YouTube. So after our round and a quick lunch, we drove back to Boston, and I recorded this episode. So fasten your seatbelts, keep your hands inside the car, and let's get started. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter podcast, Matty.
It is so good to be back, Fred. Live, alive. We're usually by,
Skype. Or...
Skype, yeah.
Well, actually, right now we're driving in your car. We just finished a round of 18 holes. Mm-hmm. Let's review our round of golf first, and then we'll get into our hacker's thoughts on the British Open, the Open Championship for 2010. But where did we just play,
Fred? We're at Widow's Walk in Scituate, Massachusetts. Scituate is on the south shore of Massachusetts, about a half hour from the Cape. When you're heading down the coast of Massachusetts along the coast, there are some towns like Scituate and Plymouth that you hit just before you get to the Cape and cross over the bridge.
And we're headed back towards Boston right now.
We're headed back towards Boston, and you are staying in Newton, which is a suburb of Boston, a city suburb right outside in the outskirts of Boston. Yep.
Now, the great news is that, I don't know if you can hear this on here, but it's just starting to rain now, and it had been threatening all day, but we didn't have any rain in our round of golf, so... It was very humid, and actually, if you want to see highlights of our round of golf, I did video, so check out Golf Smarter TV and look for our round at Widow's Walk, for Maddie and I. It's my second round of my vacation. My wife was very generous letting me play golf twice on the vacation, but it was equally supported on both ends. Anyway, so Widow's Walk, what's the deal with this course?
Well, you could do a separate show on Widow's Walk, to tell you the truth. It's the first environmental show course, they called it, built in the country, as far as I know. I think it was built in 94 or 96. And
got the scorecard right here.
Okay,
let's see what it's. It's America's first environmental demonstration course.
Yep, demonstration course. So in other words, it was the first one they really built kind of green, and before it was kind of hip to do that. Nowadays, I mean, Justin Timberlake's building green courses, so everyone's doing it. But back then, it wasn't so vogue to do so, but they did. They built it around what was a quarry, and they kept the environment in mind, and they built it around some estuaries, and you can actually go bird watching. It's a gorgeous little course.
Well, you'll see on our... Hey. All right, some guy was trying to...
Boston driver.
He's got to get on...
I'll show you how we do it, Fred, here when I pull off in a minute.
So, the birds were phenomenal. You'll see on the video there was this hawk, huge hawk, that seemed to be following us throughout the round of golf. And I tried to get some video of it, but it wasn't close enough for us to really... Well, we tried to make it move.
There was a lot of birds on the course, not many birdies, however.
You had one.
I had one, yeah. And I also had about 7/8. So.
And I actually, on that par 3, my shot was closer to the pin than yours, but you made the birdie.
That goes to show you, doesn't matter how close you get it, got to make the putts.
Yeah, and I keep saying it's not how far, it's how close.
That's right.
Yeah, there's some really interesting holes on this course, and it says also that it is the 1998 recipient of the Best New Golf Courses in America by Golf Digest magazine. And the real nice thing, we played, weekday, we teed off at about 9:30, and it wasn't that expensive.
That was the other thing I was going to say, is that, if you're in the area, if you're in the South Shore of Massachusetts, there's a couple upscale Publix that are in Plymouth, but they're all, 80 to 100 $25. This is a more than enough of a challenge for any golfer, and I think with you and I and card, it was $75, which is nothing.
Yeah, that's a great deal.
So yeah, check out Widow's Walk if you're on the South Shore of Massachusetts.
3 par fives in the front 9, and 2 on the back. So it's a, but there was only 1 par 3. No, wait, there are 2 par threes. How'd they do that? So there's a 37-37. So it's a par 70. No, it's 37-35. Oh. That's what it was. So there was 1, 2, 3 par threes
in the back,
and 2 in the front.
Yep.
And so that's how they balance it out. Yep. So it was a par 72, and we're not going to discuss our scores.
Nope, we will not.
No, and that eco-friendly course got a very good chance to eat up my eco-friendly Dixon Earth golf balls. I started out with 11 balls. I played a couple days ago and didn't lose a ball, but I like to leave the Dixon Earth balls behind, so I left the 2 on the course that I had in my pocket. So I came in with 11 balls today, and going into the 18th hole, I still had 3 balls left in my pocket and lost all 3 on the 18th par 5.
Boy, that was a thin par 5. The par 5s were short and thin. There was just no room for error on this course, and... I've played tight courses before, but this course was tight with a lot of blind shots and no collection areas around the green. I mean, you didn't hit the green. If you missed it long left or long right, you're out of play. It's not like it's going to funnel down to a collection area you can chip up. It's just gone. So it was tough golf.
Yeah, and it was a very good challenge. We were playing from the white tees, and that read at 129 on the slope, I think it was. Let's see, the white was a 127, blue was 129. So we could have done better, but we had a great time.
We did. We always have a good time golfing together.
That's true. That's true. So anyway, let's talk about, I didn't see any of the Open Championship this year. I was, again, I'm on vacation, so I wasn't, well, one of our phones is looking for a signal. Sorry about that noise.
No, I should shut this off.
Okay. So, Open Champion. No, we'll just keep going live. It's a podcast. Right, we can do that. What road are we on, actually?
We're on Scenic Route 3. For anyone that knows the area, we're on Route 3, which is the road that'll take you to the Cape if you're heading south. We are heading north on Route 3 back towards Boston.
And I think it's my phone that's actually making all that noise. Gotta love these smartphones. And I'm going to turn this one off. So the Open Championship this year, I didn't get to see any of it, although I did get to read about it. Yes. And what one thing that I did read about is the fact that none of, what is it, the last six majors have been won by first-timers. Did you know that?
Say that again.
None of the last six majors, yes, a first-timer has won it. Their first major, each guy who won it, it was their first major that they had won.
That's right. Well, this is what I said, you know, on the Matty Blake show all the time about when we did pieces on the majors, is that Tiger, look, in the history of golf, basically, there was three guys that seemed to be able to win when they decided to. And it was, you know, Byron Nelson during that stretch, Nicklaus, and Woods. And especially with the majors, I think we forgot because of Tiger, it looked for a while there that he could just decide to show up and play, that he'd win one. The majors are where golf shows you its true colors, where golf's in charge, not a player. And if you just look at the list of major winners, you have these names that pop up out of nowhere, and then you never see them again. And it's because golf is so arbitrarily difficult on any given day. And that's why these names come out of nowhere. I mean, Louis Oosthuizen looked like he was one of the top five golfers in the world for four straight days. I venture to guess you probably won't see him in many top tens in the next few months. And if you do, he'll fade back into obscurity.
But what I understand is a lot of the players had recognized this guy and said, oh, yeah, on the European Tour, this guy's the real deal.
Well, sure, yeah. I mean, you know, they recognize he's a player, but he was like, what, ranked 125 or worse in the world? So, yeah, they see him. They know he can play. If you're one of the top 100 players in the world or top 200 players in the world, you can play the game. But on any given day, you know, you're just kind of picked out of obscurity in a major. You know, like, he was 125, but we never saw him. The general public never saw him. How many top 10s did we see him have before that day where he just looked flawless? And I just think that's the thing about majors, is that it either does one or two things. A major seems to do one or two things. It seems to crown a guy like Tiger, who we all know is going to do it, or it just places its hands on someone who is destined to win. You used a word today, Fred, at lunch. It was a Yiddish word. What was the Yiddish word? What was it?
Beshert.
Beshert. The majors pick a player and it's beshert. It was meant to be. It was destiny. Like from day one, look at Zach Johnson. Zach Johnson winning at Augusta, okay? Zach Johnson's a nice golfer. He's a great golfer. But he's not winning every other week like Tiger. You know, he's not one of the greatest golfers of all time, but he won the Masters. And I venture to guess, not to be mean, and I love Zach Johnson, but God bless him, but he probably won't win another one ever. So it's so arbitrary and capricious, and it's so hard. Here's another example. How many guys have shot that 59 score?
Yeah.
Right? Five guys, I think it is. And it's not only five guys. Here's the surprising thing. The five guys aren't Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, you know, Tiger Woods, and Ernie Els. The five guys are five kind of no-names, and David Duval is one of them.
Yeah.
So golf is so arbitrarily difficult, and when it's your week, it's your week. And that's what I just felt like. It was like Louis Oosthuizen was one of these guys. It was his week to win. And there was nothing you could have done. It was just his week to play like the best in the world.
Yeah, it was remarkable.
I mean, on Sunday, Fred, after the third hole, there was just no doubt anyone was going to touch him. You know, Paul Casey kind of just fell apart. And this guy was just flawless. They kept saying, well, let's see how he does with the big lead. And he was dominant from from moment one. You just knew watching it, like he's going to walk away with this.
Yeah, and there was a little bit of movement. It got a little close in the middle there, but it just couldn't. Who was it that got second? I tell you,
Casey.
I didn't see.
Yeah, Paul Casey was in the final group, yeah.
And I think I even read that that one of the announcers on TV said that he saw a truck driving away in the distance, and he said that's the only movement that's been going on this Sunday.
It's true. It's kind of boring. The most exciting part was when Paul Azinger tried to pronounce Louis Tazen's name and called him like Austin Hazen or something ridiculous. It was hilarious. And he said, we'll give you a mulligan on that one, Azinger.
Well, listen, we're going to have to get back to Fred and Matty right after this word from our sponsor, because today this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. Now, for Golf Smarter listeners who do not already have an Audible account, to entice you to try out their service, Audible is offering a free audiobook of your choice. Summertime is great reading time, but it's difficult to read while you're traveling. So audiobooks are a fabulous alternative. Personally, listening to an audiobook while hanging out in airports is a tremendous way to relieve stress. Have you ever noticed that airports are the single greatest cause of stress while on vacation? At least they are for me. Anyway, an audiobook to consider is recommended by Golf Smarter Listener. I got an email from Richard Todd of Amherst, Ohio, and he said that he's been listening to an audiobook that he's nearly done with that had him laughing out loud. The references to clubs and equipment is old, using the terms niblick and mashie rather than the current club terms, but the book is a series of short stories that weave golf with love and life advancement. The book is called The Clicking of Cuthbert by P.G. Wodehouse, and there are actually two different versions on Audible.com, one read by Frederick Davidson that's had 16 ratings over 4.13 out of 5 stars, and that's over 6 hours long. The other version is read by Jonathan Cecil that's received a rating of 5.0, and again, that one's 6 hours and 20 minutes. So a good book to check out if you need a recommendation. Again, thank you, Richard, for referring The Clicking of Cuthbert by P.G. Wodehouse. Now, to get a free audiobook of your choice, choose whatever you'd like, whether it be about golf or not, go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. That's A-U-D-I-B-L-E. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. Now, let's get back in the car with Fred and Matty and see what happens next.
The last time that we talked, when we did our little wrap-up of the U.S. Open, you talked about this 20-stroke rule that you have.
Yes.
And it, I found it fascinating because it made me feel better about my own golf than when I'm shooting an 82 on one day and a 97 on the next. And here he comes out and shoots, what, he opens up with this amazing, what, 63?
Record low, tied with the record low in a major, correct? With a 62 or 63, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And then the next day shoots an 80.
Yep, and there you go. There's your, and now, but here's the thing, what did he do the next day? Came back out and shot another subpar round. So what is he? Is he an 80 golfer? Is he a terrible golfer?
Yeah.
No, he just had a day that... I'm like a Pied Piper trying to carry this message to people about the 10 or 20 stroke rule, because I wasted so many years kicking myself. And I would say things like, well, how can I shoot, you know, an 83 and then a 97? Like, what am I? What the hell? Who does that? Well, the answer
all of us.
Is everyone. Everyone does that, if they're honest. Yes. So... You know, look, that's kind of my message to people, is that if they do it, if they have that day where they just can't barely swing, then we're going to too.
We play they being the pros.
Yeah, the pros. Or even like your local scratch golfer you think so awesome at your course. You know, he's going to have a day where he shoots an 87 or an 86 for him, which is going to be like 100 for us. You know, it just happens. It's golf. And if you can just kind of be okay with that, you know... I think I might have said this in the last podcast, so forgive me, I'm repeating myself, but I read an article with Henrik Stenson. He was talking about the K Club being in Ireland, and he said, at the K Club in Ireland, I didn't know on the tee that day, and he was in the hunt at one point, and he said on the, like the third day or something, he said, I didn't know if I was going to hit it 300 yards left or 300 yards right, either a dramatic pull hook out of bounds or a huge slice. I didn't know. And he laughed about it, like, yeah, you know, so I just fought through the day and... teed it up the next day. You know, he didn't make some big radical change. He didn't think he was a failure. He didn't say, oh my God, what do I do? He just knew, like, that's golf. Some days you're just going to, it's going to slip through your fingers.
Yeah, we actually had a podcast, I don't remember who it was, recently, where the guy said, you just got to play with what you have that day.
Yes, and that's what we both did today. You know, we struggled, and it was a hard course, but, you know...
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, Matty. Was anything similar to what you did today?
Yeah, pretty much.
Are you going to swallow your own words here?
Yeah, that's why I'm so passionate about it. I don't know if you can hear the passion in my voice, because I did that for years and punished myself with that, you know? And then you go, all right, well, let's see. I just started off on the back nine with a par and a birdie, and then you go double, double, triple. And it's the most disheartening feeling, you know? And you start questioning, you start asking yourself, well, who am I? Am I the guy that swings so fluid and just flushes the ball and makes an easy birdie without even trying? Or am I the guy who just was lucky to can that putt for an eight? You know?
And I need to interrupt for a second. If you just heard a siren going by and you're listening to this podcast while you're driving, that was on our recording as an ambulance drove by. Don't pull over.
That's right.
Okay? Drive carefully, please.
Keep going. Sorry.
Do you remember what you were just talking about?
Yes, I do.
I interrupted.
I was just saying that, yeah, it's tough. And that's why I'm so passionate about that message, is just to be kind to yourself and remember that this is golf.
I've been recently trying to play rounds of golf in groups, my holes, you know, like in three-hole increments. Mm. And so, you know, if I can walk away with, like, plus one on the on a three, and then if I could, you know, plus two on a three, trying to stay within that even plus one, plus two range, I feel great, because there's going to be blow-up holes.
Yes.
There are going to be blow-up holes, and you try to limit those, obviously. So if you bunch them up in groups of three, and it's interesting because you'll have a blow-up hole and you'll notice that you'll have another one after it or before it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to have a group of three where maybe you're plus six or plus seven. Mm-hmm. And then if you can keep your, you know, get past that and think, okay, I can go plus one or two on this next three, I'm back in it.
Yes, right? Yes.
Instead of just quitting on it.
That's right. And I love your mantra that you always have is, and I used it today actually, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot. We were on a tight par four, and I pulled I was going to play safe because it was a tight, small par four. It was only 180 to the 150 marker or something, so I took a 5-iron off the tee, and I spazzed out and pulled it left into the woods out of play. And
that's not my line. Jay Shea, who took me out to play at Sonoma National, that was his. Jay, you get credit.
Much kudos, because what I did was then you went to tee up, and I was going to hit my, you know, third shot off the tee now, and I went and pulled out driver, and I stopped, because I was pissed, and I stopped myself, and I said, okay, now that's following a bad shot with a stupid shot. And I put the driver back, and I grabbed the 5-iron again. I said, now just put this one in play, and you can maybe make a bogey, double bogey. You know what I mean? But if I pull out driver and try and blast one because I'm angry, oh, what the hell, I'm already out of bounds, and I pump another one gone, which on that hole was more likely, you know, now that's a real bad hole. So I love that. I love that thought of never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot, which I did for many, many years.
We all do it until we, you know, our ego gets caught up in this. Yeah. Let's get back to the Open. Yes, yes. I don't know how we got over that. We're going to keep coming back to our round of golf today, because
it was helpful.
It was painful today. It was painful. So now we have Rory McIlroy, who had, he went minus 16 on three of his rounds, but he had an 80 on his second round. And it just really is such a great lesson for all of us to learn. Have we witnessed the end of Tiger's reign? Do you think? I mean, because clearly he's not the young man. He's gone through a lot in his life. He's had distractions. You know, people were concerned, oh, wow, Tiger gets married. You know, I remember when he got married and we're thinking, oh, well, he's going to lose the fire in his belly. Sure. And he came out and he played great golf. And then he had unfortunate circumstances. And, you know, we were dragged through all of that, let alone what he had to go through, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we want to see him win again. It's good for golf when he wins again. There are people who love to see him fail. But that's just the nature of the beast.
Yep.
And even...
Phil Mickelson. I mean, these are the two of the probably the two greatest players of our era right now. But the rest of the pack has caught up with him. Will he have a great run again, or will he win a couple more maybe and never reach Palmer's record?
Nicklaus's record?
I'm sorry.
You know, there's that famous story about the guy who, and I don't know running, but he broke the 1 minute or the 2 minute mile record. No one thought you could run the 2 minute mile in.
No, 4 minute.
Four minute mile. Sorry.
Nobody's broken the 2 minute mile.
I told you I don't know running. No one can break the 4 minute mile, and the guy does it by 0.1 of a second, let's say, and he does that, and then people are breaking it left and right forever.
Right.
And I feel like that was a little bit of what Tiger did. You know, at first, the first decade of Tiger's dominance, I think everyone was so shocked and so overwhelmed by his performance at Pebble Beach and his performance at the Masters that I think the old pros, the Davis Love, the Thirds, and people like that, hadn't trained like that, hadn't prepared like that, didn't put that mental killer instinct into it. And they were just, there was no one to keep up with it. They were just like, oh my God, this kid's a phenom. What do? We just watch him be awesome because no one's even close. However, these kids now have grown up with someone who's broken the 4 minute mile, if you will.
Mm.
They've grown up with someone that's just done it consistently. So I don't think it's as scary to them anymore. And I don't think he's as scary. And his health is an issue. You know, you say, well, Nicklaus won a major at 40. Well, you know, Tiger's had reconstructive surgery on that leg, and he's had a torn Achilles tendon, and he's had wrist problems, and he's had everything. So, and the way he plays, the way he swings, he lashes at it. So I think kind of in a sense we have seen the end of his dominant reign where people were just scared to be in the group with him and he could just will a win. I think he'll win a couple more, win a few more. I think he's got a chance to break Jack Nicklaus's record if he plays into his, you know, mid-40s. He could win a couple majors with the shape he's in if his health holds up at 43, 44 years old. But it's not going to be a walk to the finish line. It's going to be a crawl to the finish line, I think, to get the record. I think we, in a sense, have seen the end of his dominance. He's human, and people know it.
Yeah, yeah. And what about Phil Mickelson? I mean, you know, Phil's game is such that he takes a lot of risks, and when he makes those amazing shots, we're blown away that anybody can do that. But he doesn't every time. He'll take risky shots, and it'll backfire on him.
Yeah. You remember the movie Say Anything with John Cusack? And he says they're fighting over what to name their imaginary kid if they ever had a kid. And she wants to choose a name. And he goes, no, you don't choose that name. That kid's a nerd. That kid eats paste. I'm not going to say the names in case some of your listeners have that name to offend them. But and then he says, you know.
Wait a minute. You have a kid. Didn't you do the same thing? I mean, we came up with names. And it's like, she goes, I went to elementary school. Nerd. He's a jerk. Yeah, I do not want my kid having that.
Yeah, basically. So then he said, no, you want to name him, you know, Gus or whatever the name was, Max. He said, you know, Gus is the guy who you can hang out with, have a beer with. He can puke in your back seat of your car and you don't mind because he's Gus and he's your buddy. That's how I feel about Phil Mickelson, you know? He's the golfing equivalent of Gus. You know, Phil can puke in your back seat. You go, all right, it's Phil. All right,
Phil.
Cool, man. And people just love him. And because he's like that, because we will take driver when we shouldn't, and we will take crazy chances when we shouldn't, when we should play smart. And we just love that about him, I think. And he's got, you know, the other thing is, he's just affable out there. He looks like he's having fun. He acknowledges the crowd. He smiles, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, but we've seen him recently where his body language does not look like he's having very much fun.
He was definitely defeated at the Open, and I wonder, you know, it goes both ways. I mean, you wonder when your wife is sick like that, even if she's quote-unquote doing well. You know, I know from experience, my wife went through a brain tumor, non-cancerous, thank God, but she went through the surgery. And even when things were well, quote unquote, you know, you're carrying that weight on your shoulders around. And, you know, you just wonder, maybe she's going through sickness right now from the drugs and he's calling her and she's sick. And, you know, you don't know. But he definitely looked defeated.
Yeah, and distracted.
Yeah, and distracted and tired. And he, you know what? Here's the thing. He's earned that. he's earned a couple of those. He's earned a couple slumped shoulder, screw this rounds, because he's been pretty gracious in terrible defeat. He's been pretty gracious in defeats that would crush a lot of golfers and come back and won other majors. I mean, for him to come back after that Wingfoot debacle, teeing off on the 18th hole with the lead and spraying it out of bounds like that, some of the putts he's missed in majors coming down the stretch would have destroyed a lot of golfers. So I think Phil has earned enough cachet in the losing with grace department to have a couple, you know, slump shoulders, oh, woe is me rounds.
In reading between the lines of what you said, I get the implication that Tiger, you know, we're not feeling like, you know, he's brought this on himself, as opposed to it's happened to him. We don't feel as badly for him for what he's going through.
Well, you know, you reap what you sow. And Tiger's whole aura was that what he built his success on, and God bless him, was iron will. It's just me against the world. You're my opponent. You're my adversary. If you're in my camp, then you're in my camp. If you're not, you're not. Me and Stevie, you know, that whole thing, that militaristic type of one man eye of the tiger, pun intended, thing.
Oh, I get it.
Was how he rolled. So now things are not going so well. And so he's almost put himself in that kind of villain category, if you will. And so it's harder to feel for a guy like that, I think. It's fine when it's going great. It's an admirable trait. When things aren't going so well and you're, you know, ignoring fans and throwing cameras at media guys and stuff like that and not answering questions and being kind of bratty on the course, then it's not so good anymore when you're losing. You know, it's not so. It's just like in basketball. When a team's winning, the coach can do whatever he wants. He can get five technicals and get thrown out of games, and it's considered gamesmanship, and he's getting his team motivated. If the team starts losing, he's getting technicals, then he's a bum, and he's out of control, and he's lost his temper. So Tiger's, this is how he built his fortune, and this is how he built his reputation, and now that things aren't going so well, it doesn't look so pretty.
During the U.S. Open, Tiger finished up by saying that he made three mental errors, and it later came out that he was actually blaming Stevie. He was blaming his caddy on that. Were you surprised to see that Stevie was still on the bag, or do you think Stevie, he's locked in no matter what?
I wouldn't be surprised by anything Tiger did at this point, but I think Stevie's pretty locked in because their personalities really fit. And you gotta, not to get too into the negative part of Tiger, but you gotta know, or you've got to assume that Stevie knew everything Tiger was doing. I don't care what Tiger says. Your caddy and you are together all the time, and you're getting him prepared. So Stevie had to know what Tiger's was doing to some extent, and kept it close to the vest. And that's like earns him. He's in. You know, he's in. I think he's Tiger's probably most trusted confidant in a way. You know, and I think Stevie and him have that same type of type A. I mean, I've read stuff about Stevie Williams on the racetracks when he races back home, and he's, you know, he'll get up in someone's face and put his finger and grab him by the shirt. You know, he's an animal. He's a warrior like Tiger. So I think they fit way too well together to separate at this point.
Any other names in the Open Championship that stood out to you?
Yes.
Things that you'd like to share? Because again, I didn't see it, so
I'll tell you who I was rooting for, and I don't know why, because I know, Spock, talk about a villain. People hate him, but I was rooting for Sergio because...
I know why.
Go ahead.
Because Spain won the World Cup, a Spaniard won Wimbledon, and Sergio could have made it a triumvirate there, a Spanish triumph.
If I cared even one whit about tennis or soccer, then yes, you'd be correct. But unfortunately, I don't give a crap about either of them. No offense to your European listeners. It's just not how I roll. But, no, he's been through such a tough time. And I remember in the last major, Faldo was talking about, he ran into him at the Masters and like the pre-dinner. He said, so, how you doing, you mate? You ready to go? And Sergio has just kind of looked off in the distance and said, no, I'm terrible. And Nick said, he just seems so lost. Oh. And he's just going through, you know, he's been through a lot. And I understand he's a brat and he said bad things and he flipped off the people in New York at Bethpage and all that stuff. But, you know, he's fighting through it. He's still out there. He hasn't quit. And he played really well at the British Open. Like, he was kind of hanging around there for a while on Saturday. Yeah, and he was making some putts. And, you know, he was under par. And I just kind of said, wouldn't that be an awesome story if after everything he'd been through, if he finally got his major, you know, if he won one. And I'll tell you what, look out for him at the PGA. Look out for him at the PGA. I got a feeling.
He's never won a major?
No, he won the TPC. He won he won the Players. So he won a mini major, I guess.
Yeah, wow.
Look that up, by the way, so I don't look like a fool, but I'm almost positive he's never won one.
Well, yeah, it's so interesting that because he has hung around, and he's been there for a long time, but he is one of those guys that you really have rooted for and hope for the best. But, again, that brings us back to that's golf.
That's golf. You know? I mean, look at him at the British Open against Harrington. He had the British Open. He had the jug in his back pocket, and he lipped out the putt. And, man, that's tough. And I understood he handled it badly. I understand that. And he said the thing about, oh, this fates are conspiring against me or whatever he said. But bottom line is, you know, a lot of golfers have disappeared after things like that. And this kid hasn't. And he's still out there. And he's still a pure ball striker. And if he can just putt well one week, he's going to win something. He's going to win something big. So I don't know. I just have a feeling about him. I liked his energy at the British Open. He was calm. You know, he wasn't freaking out. He was in the hunt for a while. And I'd like to see him do something at the PGA.
Yeah, you know, putting four rounds together. I think that's what's such an interesting test of, you know, a golf tournament. And then the added pressure of being a major in a place like St. Andrews. You can have a great day of putting, but can you have two, three, 4 days in a row of great putting to stay ahead of the pack?
Whew. That's it. And I'll tell you, that probably kind of dovetails in that kind of elusive capriciousness, arbitrary nature of the majors I was talking about before, that it probably comes down to putting. And my God, isn't putting an arbitrary thing? You can stroke the ball beautiful and do everything right, and for some reason that day, everything's going to lip out, as you proved today, Fred. I mean, Fred had...
I was really hoping you were going to bring that up.
Fred had literally, I mean, like 8 or 9 putts that were going, oh, nice putt, that's in, and it would just lip out. Now, why some days it lips out, and some days they
Wait, he's got a drive here. Yeah, we're getting off. We're on 3?
Yeah, we're on Route 9.
Now we're on Route 9.
We're going to stop at Dunkin' Donuts. See, on Route 9, Freddy.
we've done the Dunkin' Donuts thing already today. Now we're on Route 9. We're getting close to our destination.
Yeah, you're home, buddy. You're home.
All right. Well, I think we're getting close to the end of this podcast, too. But, yeah, I was lipping them out today, and there were so many that we both were like, all right, that's in. And it just right around the edge.
Yeah, that's it. And so, you know, yeah, that's probably what it comes down to. And that's probably why these majors are so arbitrary and who wins them sometimes, because it's just the guy who they happen to be. I mean, look, you don't think those guys are firing in from tee to green pretty consistently? They are. You know, the top 5% of them, they're firing in at the pin. You could draw a circle around each pin each day, and there's going to be a 10-foot concentric circle around the pin, yesterday's pin placement, and you'll see all ball marks around it. Question is, who's draining those putts for four days?
Well, interestingly enough, when we talked to Jason Prio a couple episodes ago, and he's the guy that I don't know if you heard this one. He was the guy that tied for last in the Open.
I did hear that. The teacher, right?
The teacher, right. Yeah. The high school coach who made the cut. And when I asked him about number 14, which was the hole at Pebble Beach that was just driving everybody crazy. They were bad-mouthing it to the press afterwards, saying it's ridiculous. They have to make changes. And he said... And he parred it all 4 days.
That's amazing.
And he said, because those guys are used to attacking the pin.
That's right.
And that hole, you can't do that.
That's right. That's right.
Oh, look at that. So, fine. So, you know, it's interesting. I was very impressed while we were driving on the road right there that neither of us commented about that Ferrari that was in front of us. We were so zoned into our conversation. There was a white Ferrari right in front of us.
Oh my God! And I am so self-involved in what I'm saying. God, I love myself.
Two guys driving. It's like car. Look, big car, white car, little fender.
We might be in New Hampshire right now, for all I know.
Well, you know, it's just like two guys after a round of golf.
driving home, you know, going over the round, going over the most recent major. I mean, this is, we appreciate everyone joining us for this drive with us. I hope you enjoyed it too.
You know, real quick before you sign off, this is what I love about Golf Smarter. And what you just hit it. It's people who love golf and just love talking about it. And that's what I love about golf is the camaraderie that we're sharing right now. And I just, this is my favorite part about golf is the post round chit chat. Love it.
Yeah. But we didn't know the 19th hole was going to be in your SUV.
No drinks, by the way. No open containers in this state.
Maddie, it's so great to play with you, man. This has been so much fun that we got to meet over the internet, and we've become friends. We've played golf a couple times together. I'm going to keep coming back for your hacker's perspective on every major, just because it's so much fun to talk to somebody who's not only someone who loves golf, but also makes a living out of being a comedian. And really appreciate you coming on, and thanks for driving out from Connecticut, coming to Boston to play golf with me, man.
Fred, anytime, anywhere, I will meet you. Thank you, my brother. Thank you.
Well, that was a first, and as always, I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. I don't know if I'm going to ever record in a car again. Definitely not while I'm driving, because it's hard to think about what you're going to talk about while you're driving. Clearly, Maddie didn't even see that car. There was a Ferrari right in front of us. Hey, I got some great news about the Dixon golf balls. Dixon has completed development of their full line of eco-friendly golf balls, and we're happy to have them available in our Golfer's Mart at pricing that you probably won't find many other places. Their newest ball is called the Dixon Fireball. It's just coming out as we speak. It's a very specialized ball for the best of the best golfers. They're charging $80 a box for these balls. And if you're interested, I can get them for you if you want. I'm hoping to secure an interview to see why that price and who they're for. Clearly specialized ball, but we'll find out more. We still have the Dixon Earth golf ball, and now we have the first 100% extreme distance eco-friendly ball. You heard me talk about it a couple weeks ago. It's the Dixon Wind. Now, every ball you purchase from us will have the Golf Smarter logo, and if you order from anywhere in the continental United States, there's no charge for tax or shipping. So here's the pricing that we've been able to develop with Dixon. The new Dixon Wind ball normally sells for $24.95, but we have them for Golf Smarter listeners for only $21.95, and Golf Smarter members can pick up a box of 12 with the Golf Smarter logo for only $19.95. But if you've been having as much success with the Dixon Earth ball as I have, and you still want to try out the Dixon Wind, I've got a special offer. Golf Smarter listeners can purchase two boxes of Dixon Earth balls at the normal price of $39.95 each and get a box of Dixon Wind balls for only $9.95. If you're a Golf Smarter member, you can get two boxes of Dixon Earth for the reduced price of $34.95 each, and we'll throw in the box of Dixon Wind balls for free. So once again, it pays to be a Golf Smarter member. If you're not a member, please join today and sign up for Plan B, and you'll receive a box of Dixon Wind balls with it, all with the Golf Smarter logo. Now, before we go, I want to make sure that you enter to win the Black Magic Wedge that we talked about with the Golf Junkies in the last two episodes. I've been getting a lot of emails about those shows, and in particular, there's been a lot of interest expressed over purchasing a Black Magic Wedge. Many of you even said that you'll probably go ahead and purchase the Black Magic Wedge at blackmagicwedge.com. And if you do, make sure they know that you heard about it on Golf Smarter, and you will receive free shipping. Deadline to enter is August 13th, 2010. And to enter, come to the website and click on the Enter Contest button. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button, and don't forget to click on the contest button to enter and win a Black Magic Wedge at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.